Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, the focus is back on politics as we approach the August 12th primary election. There are two Democrats running on the primary ballot for the chance to take the seat currently occupied by incumbent Republican Sean Duffy. Several weeks ago, we had one of those Democrats, Kelly Westland of Ashland, as our guest on Route 51, and today we discuss the issues with candidate Mike Crisine of Holton, who in 2010 ran as an independent for the 3rd Congressional District seat occupied by Ron Kine. Because of redistricting, Mike Crisine now lives in the 7th Congressional District. Mr. Crisine is a person who's got a Bachelor of Science in Aerospace Engineering from the University of Minnesota. He's worked as a design engineer in the aerospace industry and now at his own company, Visionary Engineering. He has a wife and 4 daughters and lives on a 26-acre farm in Holton where he raises grass-fed beef. On his webpage, he calls himself Christian and Constitutional and says he wants to end the cozy relationship between big banks, big corporations, and big government. He wants to dismantle the Federal Reserve and the IRS, decriminalize drugs, stop NSA spying, end illegal immigration with no amnesty, eliminate the Common Core curriculum, stop foreign aid, bring the troops home, keep the government from defining marriage, and encourage abortion alternatives. Mike Crisine is taking your phone calls live on the air at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question on our Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. And Mike's website is also linked on our Facebook page. And Mike, it is Weapon of Mass Reduction. Is that .org?
.org.
.org. Weapon of Mass Reduction. .org. Well, Mike Crisine, thanks so much for being with us, and thanks so much for traveling all the way out here this morning. It's always better when we can get a guest in studio.
My pleasure, Glenn. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about your work as a design engineer in the aerospace industry and your own business, Visionary Engineering.
Okay, well, I've been an engineer for the last 20 years, combination aerospace, defense, mechanical engineering. I've worked on a lot of aerospace programs, a lot of missile systems, missile guidance systems, turbine engine aircraft systems, and also some different defense products, so Joint Strike Fighter, the 787 airliner.
You were working with Honeywell for a while, correct?
Yep, I did guidance and navigation systems for missiles with Honeywell.
So talk about your own company now.
Okay, Visionary Engineering. We help small entrepreneurial firms with technical expertise in the aerospace and the mechanical engineering sectors. So we help them get up and going. We provide design, thermal analysis, CAD, different services for them, program management.
Tell us about your family.
I've got my wife, Annie, and I have been married for about 7 years. We've got 4 daughters and 1 deceased young boy, Joey. So my daughters are Elizabeth, Laura Marie, Laura Beth, and Samantha.
And you live on a 26-acre farm. Tell us about that.
26-acre farm, yep. As you mentioned, you kind of mentioned the almost everything. You ran the gamut on me, so you mentioned everything. But we raise grass-fed beef in a natural way. We raise hogs, heritage hogs. They've got a really red marbled meat. Japanese chefs love Berkshire hogs, which we raise. Mm-hmm. And then we've got free-range chickens and eggs. So,
how do you feel about local food production, sustainable agriculture, and genetically modified crops, the whole gamut of what I would call food politics?
Well, I think people are getting back to small farms, small natural-raised products. There's a, 80%, 90% of the people we talk to and we tell them we've got a farm are eager to get products from us. We're just starting out, so we don't have a lot of volume right now, almost none. So we're just starting out, and as we get going, we'll see what the market does. But right now, it's really hot. People have heard a lot of things about GMO, mm-hmm. Genetically modified crops, specifically corn, soybeans. They're scared of it. Monsanto is a big company, and we can talk a little bit later, but they've got a lot of regulation power thanks to their money, and they've bought a lot of influence, and I don't think they've done their due diligence on testing this, the safety of their products. And then we've got Russia and China and a lot of other countries that are not accepting genetically modified crops, and our own our own country is, and it makes me wonder why our own country doesn't do as good a job protecting us as other countries' governments do as protecting them. So,
you ran as an independent 4 years ago in the 3rd congressional district, so things have been redrawn. You're now in the 7th district, but tell us why you're running as a Democrat and not as an independent.
Well, I think I'm running as a Democrat because our message is civil liberties are key. You know, in this day and age where we're watching our government get out of control, they're taking money, both sides, Democrats and Republicans, are taking money from big interests, big banks, big corporations. The federal government, as it grows, provides a big framework for these people with a lot of money to get in there and regulate, generate regulation, lobby for regulation, install regulation that really trounces the average citizen and the small companies, the small farms that we start producing. That's a big danger. And one of the things that I would like to see is that playing field, the regulatory framework that the federal government is, shrink down in size so that those kind of things can't happen.
Well, I look at your policy issues, ending big government, gun rights, bringing the troops home, dismantling the Federal Reserve and the IRS, stopping NSA spying, decriminalizing drugs. Many of those positions are also taken by the Libertarian candidates. Why aren't you running as a Libertarian?
There's two buses going to D.C., Republican and Democrat. We want to get our message out. We think that the Democratic Party leadership has really taken the Democratic Party way to the left. I mean, we've got progressives that call themselves progressives. They're really socialists, and they're really taking the party off to the left. You know, back in Kennedy's day, 50 years ago, the party was much different. If Kennedy woke up, sat up out of the grave and looked at his party, he would not recognize it. Probably wouldn't be his first concern sitting up out of the grave, but he would not recognize his own party. What we need to do, and what we need, what the message of the campaign is look what the party was back in Kennedy's day. We know that the district is on the older side. We know that it's very rural. We know that Mr. Obie, who was in Congress for 40 years, was an A-rated NRA member and had a good gun Second Amendment rating from the NRA. Those are the type of principles that we feel that the people in the 7th district have is they vote Democratic, but they are fairly conservative.
But Mr. Obie was also really in favor of using the government in order to help people. He would never support things like cuts in Social Security or Medicare or cuts in food stamps and using the government as a job creator. Isn't that socialism? By your own definition, I mean.
I'm not necessarily agreeing with everything that Mr. Obie said, but or did or.
I mean, if you're saying that progressives are socialist, you know, and Mr. Obie was a progressive, aren't you using that term to describe him essentially?
Yes. Yes. I mean, if those type of characteristics apply to Mr. Obie, then that would be the characterization. Yes.
How about the woman that you're running against in the primary, Kelly Westland? Where do you agree with her? Where do you disagree?
Well, we agree where she speaks out against corporate welfare. I agree with that. Doesn't go near far enough, though. It's one thing for the government to provide cuts for the big corporations, the big banks, in terms of regulation and a little leniency. But it's another to allow all these big interests to come in and finance campaigns, to wine and dine politicians, to use the federal government as a regulatory means. I really call these types of big corporations, big banksters, predatory capitalists. And there's a distinction. I mean, we got to stop lumping capitalism into the broad range that we're experiencing now. There's predatory capitalists, and they're the average guys, the capitalist entrepreneurs that I work with. They're not that way. They just want a level playing field to be able to compete in the marketplace without having to compete with the rules that are instituted against them, like Miller Brewing Company. Miller Brewing Company, when the home brewers came up, Miller solicited government to institute rules that the home brewers couldn't take their brew off their own private property. You know, so that creates different problems for distribution.
You're saying we have laws that help the big guys and they hurt the little guys.
Well, we don't have laws. We're always continually getting new laws through the pressures of lobbying and through the pressures of the big money that these guys wield when they make campaign contributions and PAC contributions.
Where do you agree and where do you disagree with Sean Duffy, the man who currently holds the 7th congressional seat?
Well, Sean's done a lot of liberal votes. You know, I think a lot of people in the conservative side of things, they look at what Sean's been doing and a lot of the indexes, the Club for Growth that measures Sean's votes for economic reform, the Freedom Index, which measures Sean's votes for freedom, Liberty Index by FreedomWorks measures his votes on American freedom and what his votes stand for in that regard. And then even the Conservative Union and the Heritage Foundation, those are conservative indexes. They all, without question, measure Mr. Duffy at 60, 50%. He's failing the conservative side. So
are you more conservative than Sean Duffy?
No, I would classify myself as constitutionalist. I go down and I look and evaluate things that are happening in the civil government as how do they align with the Constitution. The Constitution was a beautiful document created by the founders. So they had a great knowledge of human nature. They had a great knowledge of history. They looked at all the lords and the nobles and what they've done in the past, and they realized that, like Lord Acton said, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So they wanted to institute, you know, first the Articles of Confederation, which was too weak. The states got into trouble with each other and were bickering and arguing. The founders knew that they needed a little bit stronger document. That's why they created the Constitution. But the Constitution was made, number one, to define federal government, and number two, to limit the powers of the federal government. Article 1, Section 8 says specifically, and itemizes specifically what the federal government can do, and later followed up by Amendment 10, is everything that is not in Article 1, Section 8 is relegated to the states and the people. So right now, we look at all the government welfare programs that are going on, all the things, the Department of Energy, Department of Education, the DEA that's running a failed war on drugs. All of these things are extra-constitutional, in my opinion.
You'd eliminate the Department of Education?
Absolutely. Yep. I think we need to bring our control for our education back to the local level where we can control it.
If you just joined us, we're talking to Mike Crisine. He is running as a Democrat in the August 12th 7th Congressional District primary against Kelly Westland of Ashland. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742, or you can leave a comment on our Facebook page, and I'll read it to Mr. Crisine on the air. Sean Duffy voted with the Republican majority in Congress yesterday to go forward with a lawsuit against President Obama. Mr. Duffy says because the president has exceeded his authority in executive decisions, including a decision not to enforce federal marijuana laws in Colorado and Washington state. This is what Sean Duffy said in an interview this week on the Fox Radio Network.
We have laws saying that marijuana is illegal on the federal side. And he's rewriting federal law to allow drug sales in Colorado. It's illegal for banks to bank drug dealers. He is reworking the law to allow the banking institutions to bank the drug dealers in Colorado. And if there are changes that we want to make to the law, that goes through the Congress. The president doesn't just unilaterally waive or suspend laws and allows them to rewrite them. It undermines the whole process. And if you play this out, Brian, any future president could rewrite the tax law, suspend certain portions of the tax code that they don't like.
So, Mike Crisine, was Sean Duffy right? Should Congress be suing the president? And is the president wrong in not enforcing those marijuana laws?
Well, there's a number of different points. I'm going to disagree in principle to Mr. Duffy's complete stance on the whole issue. Number one, there needs to be checks and balances in government. President Obama needs to maintain, he's the chief executive, the chief law enforcer of the land. That's given. Number two, the federal government. I see nothing in the Constitution that permits the federal government to create drugs against, laws against drugs. I don't believe the federal government should be involved in that. Article 1, Section 8 does not give them the power for drugs. You see, a lot of illegal immigration activity crossing the southern border, a lot of that is to hide drugs. There's corridors that the Border Patrol will not touch because they're so heavily armed and heavily controlled by drug cartels.
So you want to eliminate all federal laws against drugs?
Yes. I mean, if the states...
Heroin?
Yes, everything. Everything.
LSD?
Black market. There's already black market, and we've failed in the war on drugs. We have utterly failed, and a large chunk of our crime is due to these uncontrolled drug black market trades going on, coming into the country and also being distributed in the streets. So what we need to do is we need to decriminalize it and put the government in charge of it at a state level and regulate it, tax it.
How about the lawsuit that was filed by Congress against the president for exceeding his authority? Where do you stand on that?
That I don't know enough about right now, so I can't comment on that. However, I will say that the chief executive is the chief law prosecutor.
Your opponent in the primary, Kelly Westland, favors using the power of the government to create jobs. She wants to increase taxes on the rich. She opposes cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and food stamps, and she favors raising the minimum wage. We talked to her about those issues yesterday.
Over the last, 30 to 40 years, we have seen corporate profits increase steadily. We have seen the gap between the very rich and everyone else increase. At the same time, productivity's gone up, workers are more educated than ever, and yet workers' wages have remained stagnant. It is wrong in a country that has so much access to tremendous wealth to have people who work full-time still struggle to make ends meet. When we raise the minimum wage, we're putting money back into the pockets of people who don't currently have disposable income. We're putting money into the pockets of people who will spend it and help drive economic growth for the middle class. As far as the social safety net, programs like Social Security and Medicare, these are things that were put in place to help keep people out of poverty. And if the goal of government is to fight inequality, then these are tremendously important programs. Social Security is the most effective program at keeping seniors out of poverty that we have. And if we were to lift the cap on Social Security, it would be solvent through 2050, if not beyond. In this country, the 900 wealthiest people stop paying Social Security taxes after day two of the calendar year. I think that's wrong. I think that we can do better than that.
So, Mike, Christine, let's take these one at a time. How do you feel about raising the minimum wage?
I think that it's the wrong thing to do. Mandating through government that the way businesses conduct their operations is bad. The economy, the minimum wage is part of the economy. The economy is a living thing because it's composed of people making decisions. They're living. It's like a water balloon. You poke the water balloon in one direction and it squishes out different ways.
Would you eliminate the minimum wage altogether?
At the federal level, yeah. I mean, the federal government has no
control. What about at the state level?
State level, I think we've got 50 states. A laboratory of experiments type approach would work great. See what happens. See which states like to do what. And if people don't like it, they can move from state to state. If people don't like it in the federal government, we've got to leave the country. So way too much federal control over the economy.
Your reaction to her suggestion that we eliminate the cap on Social Security taxes. Right now, after you make, I'm not sure the exact figure, but it's just over $100,000. You don't pay Social Security taxes on anything over that. So if you eliminate that cap, that would effectively raise the federal tax rate on millionaires and billionaires by 6.2%. Kelly Westland says it would keep Social Security solvent. What's your position?
Social Security is dead, as far as I'm concerned. Social Security, right now, our expenditures are 12% above what our outlays are. Our expenditures are 12% above what we're taking in. That cannot go on forever. The way we're going right now, 2033, the old age and survivors insurance benefits will go bankrupt. The disability will go bankrupt sooner than that, 2017, I believe.
But what if we eliminated the cap and brought in more money to the system?
No, I mean, you still have an imbalance of workers versus people that are taking benefits. And there's only so many wealthy people in the nation to be able to – I haven't run the numbers, but you cannot – continue to labor these people who are actually kicking money into the economy, creating jobs, you know, both the minimum wage, you start jockeying the minimum wage in here, you start increasing taxes on the people that are producing the jobs, and you're going to have people that are going to be put out of work. You're going to have costs for the remaining people that can afford to buy products go through the roof.
So, well, what are we going to do with all of the elderly people who depend on Social Security? Won't they be thrown into abject poverty?
I am not at all saying cut off Social Security. What I'm saying is phase it out. I want to give young people who have not yet had quite a few years investing in the soon-to-be-failed Social Security system, they have an option to opt out of the Social Security system. Those people who have kicked into the Social Security system, they need to get the money out that they put in. Absolutely. I am not in favor of ripping these people off. Unfortunately, as things get tight, we're starting to delay the age that people can start retiring. We're starting to tax Social Security benefits more and more. I mean, these people are getting a raw deal. What they put out, what current people put out into Social Security, they're not going to get out. So this is a bad system, and the more we keep putting Band-Aids on it, the worse off we're going to get. The federal government is using it as a pot that they can dip into all the time. And Band-Aid after Band-Aid is not going to help that.
1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to talk to Mike Crisine, running in the Democratic August 12th primary against Kelly Westland. Let's go to the phones right now, and we have Dorothy from Wausau, who is the vice chair of the 7th District County Democratic Party. Dorothy, your question for Mike Crisine.
Yes, I'm vice chair of the 7th Congressional District County Chair.
Identify yourself. What's your last name? Since
Dorothy Miller.
Dorothy Miller,
and,
okay.
Yes, and my statement is that the Democratic Party has endorsed Kelly Westland for the 7th Congressional position, and that we believe that the person you're speaking to does not represent the Democratic Party, and that everyone should vote for Kelly Westland August 12th.
And, Dorothy, why does he not represent the Democratic Party?
His statements do not, they more generally reflect the Libertarian Party, and they do not reflect the standards or any of our basis, nothing of the things that we believe in. And so we don't believe that he is a Democrat at all.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for the call. Mike Crisine, according to the vice chair of the 7th District Congressional Group for the Democratic Party, you're not a real Democrat. You're a libertarian disguised as a Democrat, and she says everyone should vote for your opponent, Kelly Westland.
I've never been a libertarian, okay? Point number one, I've never been a libertarian. Point number two, I am a member of the Democratic Party. I've got my card in my wallet. Point number three is this is the exact reason why we have primaries, because the primary is where the people get a chance to speak. And this is why I say that I am for the individual civil liberties. When I talk about big is bad, I'm not talking just about banks, big banks. I'm not talking about just big corporations. I'm not talking about big government. I'm also talking about big politics. And the big politicians here are the ones that think they could run roughshod over the people. At the Democratic Convention, I see three tiers of the Democratic Party. The upper elite, the people that hold leadership offices, who are elected officials of the establishment. Then the second tier is their supporters, the people who directly volunteer and are heart, mind, and soul following those elected people. And then we got the grassroots, the third level. So the Democratic Convention is for the two upper people, the upper levels, upper echelons of the party. They go there and they talk amongst themselves, and they create their policies, and then they punch out a Democratic candidate, but that's not where it ends. It ends with the people voting. So we go to the primary system so that the party leadership can't control everything. And right now, the Democratic candidate that the party has endorsed is not for individual liberties. She's aligned herself with the Progressive Change campaign, which is anti-gun. They want expand gun control. She has partnered with a Sierra Club that has fought against the mines up in Iron and Ashland counties. Those people need jobs up there.
What
happened to the Democratic Party that was for labor and farm?
Hold that thought. I want to move to that issue, the proposed iron mine in the Pinoki Hills region in Iron and Ashland counties. Kelly Westland says she was motivated to get into politics in large part because of her opposition to the mining proposal. She says the mine would hurt the area's tourist and recreation economy.
Number one, if the argument in favor of it is job creation, then what I'll say is that the majority of the job opportunities that we have up here in the growing sectors of economic development are in things like agriculture, tourism, fisheries, outdoor recreation. And when we allow this project to go forward, that jeopardizes every other long-term sustainable option that we have on the table. And that puts at risk, you know, the other opportunities we have. The other thing that I'll say is that this particular company cannot be trusted, and they've shown us that. They came to our communities before they even started most of this and told us that they would not seek legislative changes, and that's exactly what they did. As far as why this becomes a federal issue, number one, it's in ceded territory, and the tribes are sovereign entities. They have the right to make decisions. Right now, they have submitted a letter to the EPA requesting the authority to regulate water quality in this particular instance. And I see that if that goes forward, involving the Army Corps of Engineers and the EPA and sovereign nations, this is a federal issue.
It's a federal issue, and Kelly Westland says the proposed mine would hurt the tourist and recreation economy of the area. Mike Christine.
Well, when you're talking about the economy, you need wide diversity. You need manufacturing jobs, which are much, much better paying jobs in the beginning. You know, the EPA is one of the organizations that I would love to see disbanded. All of these departments are not old-time federal government. They're fairly recently in terms of the age of the federal government. What man has created, man can disassemble. I think the states are much more liable to make better judgment calls about what's best for the environment of their own state. As far as the mines go, that area has been full of mines for the last 100 years. I mean, there's the tailings that have dumped into the lake or provide great walleye fishing, provide great jobs, 2,000 jobs just to start the construction of the area and the mine. So
then is the mine opposed by most of the people, it seems, who live closest to the site?
That is not. It is not.
It's not?
I've been up there in Hurley where the mine would be closest, and 90% of them are in favor of it. I've talked to
them specifically. How about Mellon?
Everybody I've talked to is in favor of it.
The mayor is opposed to it.
Well, the mayor, you know, maybe he won't be reelected again.
But the mine is also
are very much, very strongly in favor of it, the guys that would get the jobs. I mean, 14% unemployment in the off-tourism seasons in Iron County alone. I mean, people need jobs up there.
The mine is also opposed by the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe. They are a sovereign nation, which makes this a federal issue. What about their opposition?
As far as I can tell, the reservation is not in these hill areas. They do not own the land. And from what I hear and what I've seen on the reservations, they've got a lot bigger environmental concerns than what the mine would do. One of these taconite mines are some of the cleanest mines that possible. So the pollution is not going to be an issue. I don't see any three-headed kids running around Hurley. I didn't see any three-headed walleyes running around Hurley or swimming in the rivers or the lakes. So I just don't buy it.
So you're saying that tribes shouldn't be allowed to dictate land use issues in areas outside the reservation, even though according to their treaty rights, you know, their ceded territories, if the tribes believe that those land uses would adversely impact tribal waters?
I think we got to talk about it. I think we need to talk about the motivations on why they would be against it. Tribes in Michigan are for the mines. Tribes in Michigan have no problem with the mines. I think it's a political stance issue here. I think there's a, you know, I think a lot of the Native Americans are taking political stance because they feel unempowered. And I wish that that was different. I think we need to talk and get through this, but America needs steel. The people of Iron County need jobs, and it makes no sense whatsoever.
The people at Bad River say they worry about their wild rice beds, and because it's right at the headwaters of the Bad River.
Okay, well, that's one of the great things about me as an engineer. One of the great things about problems is engineers can figure out answers to problems. If we got concerns, let's talk about it. There's got to be some corrective action we can do to help mitigate those issues.
We're talking to Mike Crisine. He is running in the Democratic primary in the 7th Congressional District on August 12th against Kelly Westland. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Hold on, Steve from Monaco. We'll take you right after this break.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics, Access Prosthetics, and Gimme Shelter play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can, too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum. Summer exhibitions feature 20th century printmaking, from New Deal era lithographs to Andy Warhol's pop art screen prints, on view through August 24th. LYWAM.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guest today is Mike Crisine, who is running in the August 12th Democratic primary for the 7th Congressional District. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Steve in Monaco. Steve, you're on Route 51 with Mike Crisine.
Mike, you are the first real Democrat that I have heard from Scoop Jackson in the 70s. It's exciting to hear returning to the common sense roots of the party and away from the current philosophy of writing blank checks and then wondering why things are out of money and then keep taxing people till they just stop working because there's no reason to work because you can't keep any of the money. The Social Security system was something that was a wonderful thing designed to help supplement, you know, a small supplement to the income to assist people to have a little better retirement. Well, I'm tired of hearing people whining because they stayed at a McDonald's entry-level job for 20 years and then saying, well, they can't raise a family on this. I know people that have kind of bettered themselves and taken some classes. Some people related to me were where they maybe get a CNA license or something so they can get up to $10 an hour. And then you know, how discouraging it is for them, the people that worked harder, to hear people saying, well, we're going to strike from our fast food job because we want $15 an hour. Well, it's just ridiculous. There's got to be some consequences for working hard. And when you do work hard and get ahead in life, it shouldn't be. I'm tired of the current Democratic Party being like Robin Hood, where it's just stealing from the rich to give to the poor.
All right.
Taxes is stealing.
Steve, we got it. Thanks so much for your comments. Mike Crisine, your reaction.
Steve, thanks for the words, and I totally agree. Benjamin Franklin said it pretty good. He said, I am for doing good to the poor, but I differ in opinion on the means. I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading or driving them out of it. In my youth, I traveled much, and I observed in different countries that the more public provisions were made for the poor, the less they provided for themselves, and of course became poorer. And, on the contrary, the less that was done for them, the more they did for themselves and became richer. See, to me, welfare is providing for the material needs of people, but that's not all people need. People are very spiritual. Since man started walking the earth, we've been part spiritual, part material. When we continue to give, people without need, you know, without end, people don't have a sense of accomplishment of a job well done. It robs them of their spiritual well-being. They rot from the inside out. So we need to change that. We need to be aware that not only, like Mark said, people are only materialistic, but they're also spiritual, part that Mark's ignored.
1-800-780-9742. Mike Crisine running in the Democratic primary. Let's take a different point of view from Dave Obey, who represented the 7th Congressional District for 40 years. Dave, you're on Route 51 with Mike Crisine.
Actually, I'm on Highway 29. I'm headed up to my cottage in Ladysmith. I was listening to your program. But I could not believe what I was hearing. I didn't know this was going to be on today. But I would simply say, with your guest and with the last caller, I think that I'm listening to charter members of the Flat Earth Society. Your guest has been indicating by his comments that he absolutely swallows the Republican line, which is to find any excuse that you can find to weaken Social Security. He says that he wants to abandon or abolish the EPA, which was begun by those well-known left-wing radicals, Richard Nixon and Gaylord Nelson, in order to give people an opportunity to stand up against the big polluters of this world. He endorses the mine up north. The issue isn't whether you have a mine or not. The issue is whether you have this mine under these rules. And for the life of me, I don't understand anybody who would like the idea that the mining company ought to write the laws under which they're regulated. That's fox in the chicken coop, if ever I've heard it.
Mike Crisane,
with respect to the minimum wage, yesterday a report came out pointing out that 52% of fast food workers are receiving public assistance. That means that the taxpayers, because the minimum wage is so low, it means the taxpayers are subsidizing the corporate giants like Walmart, and I don't think that's what the founding fathers had in mind.
Dave Obey, let's give Mike Crisane a chance to respond. Mike Crisane?
Yeah, there's so much to respond to here. Mr. Obey was in office quite a while ago, and political scenes change quite a bit. Mr. Obey is linking me with the Republicans. I've never been a Republican, so I guess I can't speak to that. But I am against Republicans and Democrats of the establishment. Goldman Sachs is funding both sides equally. They're funding the Republicans and they're funding the Democrats. They're the big boys. And to imply that I am for a taconite operation that would make its own rules is ludicrous.
Dave Obey, we'll give you another follow-up here.
Well, the fact is that's exactly what's happening now. The legislation that was passed by the legislature was virtually written by the mining companies. Kelly Westland is the only candidate in this race who can be counted on to stand up for regular people, who can be counted on to support the public interest rather than special interest. And the gentleman you have with you this morning is perfectly within his rights to run. But he also has a constitutional right to be wrong, and so far I've heard him wrong on virtually every issue.
Mike Crisane, your reaction to Dave Obey, and Dave, thanks so much for calling Route 51 and contributing your thoughts to the program.
Well, the first thing I want to say is my name is Mike Crisane, not the gentleman. That's one thing that the Democrats drive me nuts with is their control over the information to the people. They don't want to mention my name. I mean, you saw that demonstrated right here. They want to keep the people in the dark about who is speaking, who is presenting alternate ideas. They don't like that. If you look at Ms. Westland's site, the only thing she's got on her site for campaign stances is government handouts. She doesn't tell us where she is on guns. She doesn't tell us where she is on abortion. She doesn't tell us where she is on hardly anything except government handouts. And when you look at this, the thing to keep in mind is it's not so much what the Democrats are saying here, the establishment Democrats, it's what they're not saying. And they're not presenting everybody with the complete view of what's available out there.
We're talking to Mike Crisane. He is running in the Democratic primary August 12th for the 7th Congressional District. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back with more after this.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Greenwood Hills Country Club, Wausau, helping the community one round at a time with Make a Difference Mondays, a day open for all golfers to enjoy a round of golf while benefiting a Wausau area charity. Details at greenwoodhillscc.com.
And you are listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today is Mike Crisane, who is on the ballot, the Democratic Party ballot, August 12th in the 7th Congressional District. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742.
One other thing I want to say to in response to Mr. Obey is that, number one, I'm thankful for his 40 years of service. I think people that serve in government deserve a measure of thanks. But the second thing is, whether you're Democrat or Republican, we all swear an oath to uphold and preserve the Constitution of the United States. Mr. Obey, in his office, while he was in, did not support the Constitution in terms of granting the federal government way too much power outside Article 1, Section 8 responsibilities. So, number one, we gotta, no matter what party that you're in, you have to swear allegiance to the Constitution, whether you like it or not. And number two, we have to work together and adhere to the Constitution.
You want to end the Internal Revenue Service. Tell me why you want to do
that. Absolutely. I don't think the federal government has a right to be nosing in on our incomes. You know, taxing us for things that we consume, a sales tax would be great, but this yearly, annual, in terms of individual income tax, invasion of our privacy is a horrible thing. And for small businesses, it's a quarterly thing. Once every 3 months, businesses have to pay a tax accountant to go through and run their taxes so the IRS can peer into everything they're doing, and I just think it's wrong.
But the Internal Revenue Service implements the progressive income tax system, which allows us to tax rich people at a higher rate than middle class, working class, and poor people.
They shouldn't. Everybody is getting the same amount of value out of the government. We're getting what the federal government should be providing is a common defense. They should be providing roads, post office service. You look at Article 1, Section 8.
You're telling me that rich people aren't getting more out of our government and our economic system than poor people and middle class people are?
Absolutely. Absolutely not. I mean, they're generating the jobs that these other poorer people, in your words, have. I mean, they're contributing to the economy through hard work, staying up 80-100-hour work weeks. They're staying up late at night. They're figuring out, have a vision, creating a vision for their particular company or their particular enterprise, and they're working it so that they can provide opportunities for other people. These other people benefit greatly from the jobs that these people provide. But the federal government, if they are confined to what they should be specifically doing, the federal government does not need the income tax. We've got to keep it to pull out of this.
But won't that increase the income inequality that we have? And doesn't that contribute to the problem you have right now of big influences, big corporations, people with lots of money trampling on the little guy? That's why the income tax with the progressive system is here,
in order to level the playing field
and to help the little guy, which is what you seem to be, you know, mm-hmm. putting out as the crux of your candidacy.
Yep. I mean, you cannot. It's a fog right now. We've got loopholes up the yin-yang for all these big corporations. We've got regulations. You know, people that own large companies are going offshore and they're paying taxes offshore. They're not paying large income taxes like the rest of us have to. So the playing field is uneven. I don't know what else to say to that, except you know that the income tax is invasive, number one. Number two, the federal government doesn't need it if it's within its constitutional confines. All these laws that the federal government and all these things that the federal government seems to think it should and could be doing is the responsibility of the states and the people. We need to return to that where we can control it at the state level.
Now, Mike, I want to move on to some other issues because we're running out of time. I want to talk about the immigration crisis on our border right now with all of these children flooding across our southern border. I'm going to play two cuts for you. This is what conservative commentator George Will said about it this past week.
My view is that we ought to say to these children, welcome to America. You're going to go to school and get a job and become Americans. We have 3,141 counties in this country. That'd be 20 per county. The idea that we can't assimilate these 8-year-old criminals with their teddy bears is preposterous.
And this is what your Democratic primary opponent, Kelly Westland, said.
This is a humanitarian crisis that we have to deal with. And I don't think the answer is to just immediately ship these kids back to the murder capital of the world. I think that we have to find a better way to handle this. And really, if we step back and take a look at our values as people, I don't think anybody would want to say that we would feel okay sending these children back into harm's way.
Mike Christine, your reaction? George Will and Kelly Westland saying you just can't send these kids back.
Murder capital of the world. Boy, that's pretty inflammatory. That's pretty interesting. No, I mean, these kids coming across, a 5-year-old kids, kid knows how to get across the border from Honduras. Give me a break. How is this mechanism? How is this thing happening? People are paying a lot of coyotes to bring these kids up. People are getting rid of their kids, just shipping them off to some stranger that they don't even know, packing them in a truck and sending them, you know, hundreds, thousands of miles across the border. That's ridiculous. Something's orchestrating this, partly because of this amnesty talk. It's encouraging people to come across the border to try to seek a better way of life. And I'm all for that if they do it legally. If they're doing it illegally, I'm not for that. We need to ship them back.
We have, what, about 8 to 10 million undocumented people? You're going to ship them all back?
I would love to ship them all back. If they're here illegally, they need to leave, because we've got a lot of immigrants that are here legally that have gone through the work, that have gone through the process, and they've, I mean, it's an injustice to them. Because when we expect an American citizen, when we expect somebody who wants American citizenship to apply for citizenship and to gain it, we expect them to read and write and speak English. We expect a knowledge of U.S. history and government. We expect good moral character, and we expect them to know and honor the Constitution, which is more than our politicians do.
These
are good things, and this is the expectation if we want to have a society that's stable and an economy that's stable, and that we don't want to keep reducing wages because those people coming across work for less wages. I mean, it's contrary to what Kelly wants. She wants higher wages, but the people that she's advocating coming across are going to receive lower wages. So people aren't going to receive higher wages. It's just a non-starter.
Let's move to another issue. This is Kelly Westland's position on abortion rights and what she would describe as reproductive freedom.
I trust women to make their own decisions in regard to their personal health care and their family planning choices. I think that, you know, you've got to put yourself in somebody else's shoes before you can even attempt to judge the decisions that they make. But what we've learned across the board is that when you make abortion illegal, you don't reduce the number of abortions, you just make them unsafe for women. I think that we can all agree that we would like to see fewer abortions in this country, but the way to reduce the number of abortions is to reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies. And to do that, you've got to make sure that people have access to contraception and that they're educated about the consequences of their actions.
Your position on abortion rights and the effort in some places to make it harder to get contraception.
Boy, none of that is the business of the federal government at all. I have absolutely no idea how the federal government decided that it could, through Roe v. Wade, tell the states what is legal, what is not legal in terms of abortion. Abortion is a horrible thing. Abortion is the killing of a human life all the time. I'm against abortion.
Would you ban it?
Well, not from the federal government, but if I was a state legislator, yes.
Let's go to Barbara in Rothschild on this topic. Barbara, you're on Route 51 with Mike Crissine.
You know, that's my issue. Women's rights. I'm a very strong feminist. I believe that women have a right to control their own bodies. I'm 89, going on 90 years old. You realize when I got married, I had to have my mother take me to a doctor to get a contraceptive, at that time, diaphragms. It's stupid for the government to want to control women's bodies.
Barbara, thank you so much for your comments. Mike, do you have anything that you'd like to add on that particular topic?
As far as the federal government goes, I agree with her. The federal government should have nothing to say about it. The states, I believe abortion is murder. I believe if you want to control pregnancy, you don't have intercourse, plain and simple. You're adults, you're responsible, you should be knowing what your body is capable of, what it's not, and especially at 89 years old, she should know what leads to pregnancy. And intercourse leads to pregnancy, and it should be no surprise when people have pregnancies, but it's not the child's fault. It's never the child's fault. And to say it's a woman's choice, well, there's two people involved. One is a child, one is a woman. Half of the kids that are aborted by statistics are females, so what about that female's rights?
Mike Crissine, we're almost out of time. As I told you, the hour would go very quickly. I'm going to give you an opportunity to hear to tell people why you think they should vote for you, and specifically Democrats, why they should vote for you August 12th in the Democratic primary.
Well, we need to take the party back. We cannot any longer allow the socialist agenda to control the Democratic Party. As well, we cannot allow Mr. Duffy to remain in office either. The worst thing people could do on both sides, whether you're a Democrat or whether you're a Republican, is vote for Duffy. Mr. Duffy is being challenged in the primary by Don Rahala. Don Rahala is a much more constitutional candidate. People would do much better to have Mr. Rahala for their civil rights win the Republican primary. Likewise, I'm a JFK Democrat. I believe in civil rights. I believe in a strong economy that will help people. I believe in lower tax rates and a smaller government, which will reduce their tax burden. I believe that the Trans-Pacific Partnership and NAFTA have done a lot of damage in reducing the number of jobs that we have available and also the wages. So those are a couple things that will naturally, through the economy, if we stop these unlimited treaty practices, bolster our wages. So there's things other than just a government mandate that can be used to lift wages.
Mike Racine, thanks so much for being with us today and sharing your thoughts. And again, we really appreciate you driving all the way out here to be live in our studio. It always makes for a better show.
Thank you.
And we want to thank today's guest, 7th District Congressional Candidate Mike Racine of Holton, who is running in the August 12th Democratic primary against Kelly Westland of Ashland for the seat now held by incumbent Republican Sean Duffy. You can find out more about Mike Racine and his candidacy on his website, weaponofmassreduction.org. That's weaponofmassreduction.org. We do have a link to it on our Facebook page. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer and on-air producer today, Rick Ryer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next week on Route 51, we switch to the August 12th Republican primary race in the 7th Congressional District as we discuss the issues with incumbent Sean Duffy's opponent, Don Rahala of Superior. A reminder to follow us on Facebook. If you missed part of this program, you can hear it again in its entirety Friday night at 7 p.m. on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. It can also be downloaded at WPR.org/Route 51. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.